Everyone is crying out for peace, yes. None is crying out for justice. Everyone is crying out for peace, yes. None is crying out for justice.
Reggae pioneer Peter Tosh with Equal Rights. It is also the title of his 1977 album. So that's how far back that song goes. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and today we're getting very political. At least I hope so. You know, it's not required that you must have the answer. We are only foraging, we're only conjecturing, we are contemplating what the answer or the answers might be. So that's the value of the program, to encourage that kind of discussion. We don't have necessarily the answers, although we very well may have the answers. But if we talk things out, if we put our ideas together, we might just come up with something that approximates an answer or an explanation as to what it is we are experiencing. In that vein, 20 years ago is our point of reference for today. 20 years ago, the House of Representatives voted out 4 criminal charges against then-President William Jefferson Clinton. 2 of the charges were dropped, and Clinton faced 2 remaining charges, one of perjury and one of obstruction of justice, in a Senate trial that could have ended with impeachment and the end of his presidency. However, of course, you know, very, very feverish behind-the-scenes activities occurred because it was a significant, a potentially lethal blow here. And with all of that footwork, that fancy footwork that we didn't see, Clinton beat the odds. Talk and threats of impeachment now hound the current president, Donald Trump. Trump, however, remains adamant that he is not going to be impeached because he says his immunity, he has the best kind of immunity that anyone, any president can have, and that is, he says, if there is an effort to prosecute him, to impeach him, it will trigger a revolt by the people. It's an implicit threat itself, isn't it? You touch me, it will touch off a popular revolt. The best way to, you know, explain to the people what your position is. But he said it. Any attempt at all to impeach him would result in a revolt. So today we're asking the question, will Donald Trump be impeached? And why we're asking the question, you want to know. Well, for one thing, there is a mountain of legal opposition already in place. The president has at least 24 real legal challenges against him on various matters. But when you coordinate them all, you begin to see threads, consistent threads, alluding to abuse of power, conflict of interest, even flat out criminal activity while in office. Will these lawsuits, once they pan out, because he's going to be consumed with responding to these lawsuits for quite some time, if any of these should pan out to the level of seriousness to warrant the initiation of charges that would inevitably lead to impeachment, we don't know. We just don't know. But we do know that it is most unusual for a president, especially in office, while in office, to have amassed this many lawsuits against him. He continues to place himself in the middle of legal firestorms that raise questions about his use of the office, abuse of the office for personal gain, whether he flouts the law and doesn't care, and whether in the interest of family fortune and even more wealth, he engages in activities that are not really above par. I mean, it causes great concern. He's not bothered by these things. He just goes ahead and he does them and leaves it to his lawyers and leaves it to the Justice Department and whatever other entity he believes he controls to just produce the outcome that he wants. So inevitably, we can say that it should not surprise anybody that legal proceedings against the president are quite likely. Now, as we know in politics, what is likely to happen doesn't necessarily produce the same result. It may be plausible, it may be viable, it may even be the right thing to do to proceed along a track of impeachment. But does that mean it will happen? So I'm asking you for your views on this. You've been around for at least the last 2 years. You've followed the news reports on what this president is doing, how he skirts the law, what he wants to do. He just does it. And he does it with a certain panache and recklessness, almost as if to invite a fight. But that statement was particularly troubling when the president said, in response to the question of whether he thought he would be indicted, that if he is touched in any way that threatens his presidency, and let alone the idea of the president being actually charged with a crime that would lead to impeachment, when he predicts there will be a revolt, it is as if to suggest that's what he wants, to counter any legal action against him by the government itself, that people will revolt. It's a prediction, but it is a very, very serious kind of prediction, a very serious thing to say. It is as if he has just blown the famous dog whistle. Anybody touches me, any serious threat to me and my presidency should, in fact, trigger popular revolt, inciting a revolt, inciting riots. But that said, we come to the sober fact of what we make of this president as citizens of this country, and as the people who the president ostensibly is accountable to, ultimately. Do you believe that enough exists, there are specific things, the courses of action that would be triggered by the president's own conduct, by his behavior in office? Are those things that people are pointing to, these lawsuits and the president's own personal conduct and his contempt, it seems, for the Constitution and all that he should hold very, very holy as the chief of state? Do you think that it is the proper procedure to follow? Or do you believe that impeachment in the end, especially of Donald Trump, impeachment of Donald Trump is not warranted? And yes, he has done some foul things, but the legal analysts will ask, well, are these crimes? Are these actual crimes? He has referred, for example, to the hush money paid to women with whom he has had illicit arrangements. He has referred to that as private. These are private matters, private situations. And therefore, to make a case that, you know, his conduct on that level is comparable to the conduct of Bill Clinton with Monica Lewinsky, there is no comparison. You know, there will be such arguments back and forth, but ultimately, you are a citizen. You are a person noticing the conduct of the president and how it resonates with you and others, and whether in your judgment the president's conduct so far in many critical areas does warrant further look, intense look, because to your mind, laws have been broken here. But then again, is that enough? That people's opinions are enough to trigger an impeachment of the president? All right. So there we go. We're discussing it. There's no particular position you are obligated to take, but I'm interested in how these matters have resonated with you and still do resonate with you as a citizen of a country with a particular reputation, at least in this sense, and whether you think that the president's conduct, past and present, is of such a nature that the only way to tame this shrew is impeachment. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And let me hear, let's hear your thinking. Your thinking. How do you justify your view? How do you explain the legitimacy of your view? You know, nobody's expecting you to say A or B. I'm just interested in how you are relating to this issue, because it has become a major issue. How do you relate to the issue, if at all you do? 888-874-4888. Impeachment is a very serious process, a very serious action for the legislature, both the House and the Senate, to undertake, which is tantamount to the trial of a president on charges. And on the basis of those charges, and on the basis of a trial, the outcome, whether he's found innocent or whether he's found guilty, and then the whole country now would have to be involved, if you will, because a vote will be taken, and the president comes before both the House and the Senate, and they decide whether he, like any other person, is guilty of particular crimes. They have to produce evidence. He will offer a defense. But in all, the intention is to safeguard the alleged integrity of the office of President of the United States. Okay, Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you start us off today.
Hi, good day to you, Trish.
Thank you. Good day to you.
Okay. I have been following this Trump saga, and I think, especially on the left, most people are being very disingenuous. Miller and all of them have been looking for chargeable offense against Trump, and I'm not a Trump supporter. And most of us, and I'm really surprised at the mentality of people, even people in this audience, who keep drumming this thing about this Russia collusion. They know there's no such a thing, and just the mere fact that they're pursuing lies should tell us that it's not just about impeachment, but it still all goes back to Hillary losing the election. And most of us are refusing to recognize that they are behind the scenes hands. And I'm not saying this because I support Trump, because I'm still very much against Trump for several things he's done, especially the Central Park Five. But at the same time, when I look, there's nothing Trump has done so far that was as wicked as Obama bombing drone strikes, in killing thousands of innocent children, or the destruction of Libya, which is in shambles right now, or what they did.
But stay to the question. Stay to the point. We're talking about... Yeah, but stay to the point. The point being, what amounts to a treasonable offense? Bombing does not.
For example, the woman who he's paid money, this affair occurred long before he was running for president. So what does that have to do with him being running for president or being president? It was not a breach of any law. That was a breach of his relationship with his wife. Hello?
Yes, but there's also the matter of what is the role expected to be? I mean, in the strict sense, yes, it's about his relationship with his wife. But he's not a regular guy. He's a president of the United States. And he lied. He lied about My point is, you treat women with spiritual, and paying them and paying them for the services, should I say. That is a crime.
My point is this. If they were treating everything equal, then I'd say go for it. But I wouldn't say go for it just because we dislike him. Because, yes, for example, I hear people talking about his vocabulary. What does his vocabulary have to do with running the country? Obama was a Harvard graduate, and what? The people are still homeless and hungry. They didn't stop wrong wars. So what does their vocabulary have to do with being a good president? Yes, he's very crass, and he does a lot of buffoonery, but according to what I see, like, people are saying stuff like, he's embarrassing the country. To me, it's a misplacement of value. People are disturbed about him embarrassing the country, but you're not disturbed about presidents who kill millions of people. That says to me that...
Yeah, but you're not making a cogent argument here. You're making leaps off of the central question, which is, should the president, based on the circumstances that we know that have become central to this whole quarrel, should the president be impeached? That's the question. We don't want to go off in tangents, well, so-and-so did it, and other presidents did it, and so we're holding Trump to some different standard. That is not the discussion. The discussion is, based on the items that have been raised over the last 2 years against Donald Trump,
I see this as just looking for chargeable offense just to dethrone him. It's as simple as that. This is not about his wrongs. This is about they wanted to get rid of him because they're still mad about Hillary. I don't care what anyone says, and if that is what's going on.
All right. Thank you so much for your analysis. Ali from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Idris. How are you doing?
Okay. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. This is what I have to say. The first thing is about Trump asking his supporter for violence. This is something that Trump had been doing even before he became president. So we shouldn't be surprised about him, you know, asking his supporter to come out on the street and do whatever if he is impeached or charged with some offense. But I will say this. I think I usually talk to politics with my son, and he has been asking me since Trump became president if I thought that he would be impeached. I don't think he will be impeached. I have been telling him right from the beginning. Even with these offenses about paying that money, which is illegal, I think what is going to happen to him, and I have been holding on to this belief, is what happened to Flynn. I believe he will resign. I 100% believe that he will resign. How he will resign, comparing to Flynn, that he didn't want his son to go to jail and to be charged, I think something's going to come up where Ivanka and Junior will be charged, and I think he will make a deal. That's the way I see it. Because if this what he had done, making this payment to these ladies, and they still haven't moved to impeach him, I don't think it will happen now. So I believe sooner or later, he's going to create his own cave, and I think he will resign because it's too many things coming on the pipe, and I think he will make a deal. That's the way I see it.
All right. You may very well be right. You have to see whether Trump, in fact, evaluating his legal position, if a corresponding move is made against his children, or if the evidence amassed so far is so overwhelming, he may just resign. That's quite a possibility. but I'm glad that you raised it. Thank you so much, Ali, for your call. Let's go to Ma'at from New York. You're on the air.
Yes. Greetings again to the beloved family. I always learn so much from them, including you, Yatrice.
Thank you.
I think Ali's possibility is very, very real. I think what beloved Brother Lincoln is missing, and I would send him to the library, and he needs to get A Duty to Warn, the book put together, edited by Brandy X. Lee, because this is someone who unfit. Yeah, we can't tolerate any of the warmongering, and that's what the empire does, and empires are always on the brink of collapse and what is existential. But I don't think that that the powers that be, as it were, is going to let this guy prevail. He also needs to see House of Trump, House of Putin, The Apprentice, Russian Roulette, Collusion, so that he can understand that the Russian, it's called conspiracy, is the official wrongdoing, is very, very real, and all the people around him. Now, he also needs to remember that when the GRU, the military intelligence of Russia, was indicted by Mueller, now, of course, they're not going to be extradited here, but when they were indicted, he also indicated in that indictment that there were American persons that, you know, were a part of that. So that's going to be very, very interesting, because the Russians are continuing to attack us via social media, including what they did to impersonating blacks. But let me just make last point.
But hold on. Hold on for a second. You have already framed the basis on which Trump, if he is to be charged, if he is to be impeached, that those would be the exact charges. We don't know that.
Let me just say this. You know, there are three memos at Department of Justice saying that he couldn't be a sitting indicted, but that makes no sense. I've heard some of the most cogent analysts and national security experts say that when you use illegal means to get to the seat of the presidency, you cannot immunize that party, and even his foundation use illegal means in terms of the campaign. So the part of the memo, it also says, and this very well may be in place.
It may be a memo. What I'm trying to say is there are no formal charges yet.
Well,
so that's not conjecture.
My whole point, you trees. No. There very well can be right now a sealed indictment against Trump.
Yes, there very well might be.
That stops
we don't know that, and that
the
has not been
of limitations. But
that
I
has
think
not been established. What
it.
I'm saying is, let's not leapfrog into an area where we think there is viability for legal action against the president based on whatever it is we think. We're not discussing that. We're saying from your perspective, your own personal perspective, do you expect that there will be or there should be an impeachment? We don't know yet. We can't argue legal grounds that are not yet established.
Well, a whole lot of degenerate Republicans will have to come around. That's why, and people like Glenn Kirshner, who were former assistant U.S. attorneys and federal prosecutors, Joyce Vance, et cetera, they explained to us that we could not know precisely because it is sealed. But there is very likely, because all of those Department of Justice...
But I go back to the point. It's one, there's conjecture. This is conjecture. As far as we know, there is no document so far that positions Trump as a person who is to be charged with any crime. So let's not go there.
Well, it doesn't exist.
There's a lot of talk about it, but we haven't seen a document. Nothing has been filed, and there's a lot of people talking about things that haven't been corroborated. So leave that from the question. The question that we're dealing with here is, from your own observation as a citizen of the country, from your own observation of what has evolved since Trump took office, is there in your mind provision, is there a need to really take on the president in this way, to charge him with crimes that would lead to his ouster from office?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And the reason why we wouldn't know about the indictment already in place is the process of it being sealed. That is very likely because the Department of Justice memo everyone is talking about, it makes provision for it. And we're dealing with some pretty smart and clever people. And I
would say, we're dealing with smart and clever people who have not yet rationalized this mythical document. It is mythical right now. So the issue is not about them and their document. I still go back to why we are discussing this today. We're discussing this not from the legitimacy or the illegitimacy of their actions or possible actions. We're talking about a citizens observing the fray, what we make of the situation. We don't want to entertain, you know, ifs and maybes and what certain people will do. We don't know that. So we shouldn't go there. We have
right.
enough.
If you don't want to go there, but it just seems logical to me, but I think Ali also is on the right track. There's 17 known investigations on Trump and Russia. Okay, so that tells you a whole lot right there. And I don't think he's going to even serve out his full term. He's unfit.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Thanks a lot. Jeff from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, family.
Hello, thank you.
All the ABC to all the ancestors. I think that what's going to happen, and whether or not I think there are offenses that he's indictable. We can impeach him on one being the enrichment of his family and his wealth using the office of the presidency, his hotels, his business dealings, pipelines, et cetera, et cetera. So, but I don't think from a Democratic strategic point of view, you don't want to indict him. You want him to get to end his term. This way it leaves you an opportunity to organize and really get your party together. But you can threaten him here and there with the little charges and lawsuits and so on and so forth. But as far as the investigation is going right now, I think Ali is right on the money. All those things that he can be charged with, he will probably bargain out of. But there are some criminal things that I think they'll get him with after he's out. One of the things in about the Russia probe is that I plan and I strategize. I do these things as I coach. And one of the things is you hold your Trump card, so to speak. I don't believe that the investigation at this point is going to yield anything real big. But judging the way that he's scrambling around and judging the way that his attorneys are, Giuliani is out there, you know, on the stump post and saying this or that and how ridiculous this stuff is, they have him. They have him cornered. And he is going to, I believe that this prosecutor Comey was investigating him, he set him up pretty nicely. They thought that they were going after Russia in collusion, but it's much deeper than that. And there's a paper trail that Donald Trump does not want to have come out. So, I think we will see him get maybe to the end of his term. And if you start the impeachment process, in a year or so, his term will be over anyway. So it's kind of a waste of time. But I do believe that they will leverage those charges and these investigations against him to make him either pay back money, make sure that he doesn't get that second term. That'd be that. So that's my opinion on it. But I think that Democrats should really take opportunity to go ahead and organize themselves while the mayhem is going on.
So it is, in your view, a more strategic move to make to not cause a president to be ousted, but that does not mean they don't believe that he's guilty of certain crimes, but as a practical matter, they will basically encourage himself to move away from the stance that he usually takes. And once he's shown the amount of information that they have about him that could easily lead to his conviction, he will take the initiative himself to blunt that in order to survive.
Yes,
give him a way out, and he'll take it.
Yes, I think that's the way it's going to go. And you need to make this other point. He's talking about going, people should be going to the streets and riot because this is an outrageous charges against him, et cetera, et cetera. That move was made by John Boehner when Obama took office. When Obama wanted to do the health care, John Boehner's words were, "Well, I wouldn't be surprised if someone tried to take him out because he's being too radical." And these officials should actually be charged with threats because they know they hold a certain amount of people that will follow their words. Because if you're in the limelight, if someone says go into the streets and riot, even if it's two people, you know that there's going to be some people out there that are going to do that. So him making those kind of threats, just like John Boehner made that threat to Obama, they should both be going to jail.
So your situation, in your scenario, it is beyond the business of who is right and who is wrong, or what was legal and what is not legal. It is more a matter of a practical solution to a problem that could be far greater than the immediate problem of a president who potentially should face charges that would lead to his impeachment.
Yes, because number one, Donald Trump is going to hang himself anyway. You give him enough rope, he's going to put himself in the box anyway. So we don't really have to worry about that. Like I said, it's only another 2 years before we have to, when we change over. If we even start the process, it can drag. It can be done this and it can be done that. We can have a war crisis somewhere where, delays this hearing and that. So all that stuff can be done and they can delay it until the end of his term. So strategically, yes, leave it alone. But there are things on there, I believe, that are criminal charges that even when he's out of the presidency, because some things happened before he became president, not during the time he was president. There's some things that paper trail runs before he was president. And those are criminal. Those to me are probably more criminal charges. And he can be caught in international law. And of course, once he's out of the presidency, they can prosecute him to the fullest. So he's going to get his. He's going to get his either way. But if
fascinating analysis. I really like it. again, it's not about whether we agree or disagree. The idea is, what is the strategy likely to be in dealing with this question of a president potentially or allegedly engaging in criminal acts? And politically, how do you treat it so that everybody survives? That's a very fascinating thing. That was a very good analysis. Thank you very much, Jeff, for it. I really appreciate it. 888-874-4888. We have had some incredible analyses already today. And this is exactly the kind of thinking we have to engage in. You don't just dig your heels in and take a position, and your position primarily is that you're right. We are appreciating the nuances here between what is, quote, right, and what is practical for all kinds of reasons. What is a practical approach here that would save the nation a great deal of anxiety, a great deal of upheaval? That too comes into the question of impeachment of a president. What is likely to be the outcome of it? How would it affect the nation as a whole? So it goes beyond the specifics of crimes a president allegedly has committed, for which, like any other citizen, he should pay. But we can appreciate, based on the explanations that we've gotten so far, we can appreciate how big this problem really is, which is why people tend to approach it with very, very great caution. This is not a simple idea of, well, did he do it or did he not do it? Whatever crime he is alleged to have committed or not committed. The attitude also extends to what will be the likely result of moving against a president in this way, seeking to impeach. And what would the fallout be? How easy would it be, or how manageable such a fallout would be, which has nothing to do, really, with the specific charges against the president, of which he might very well be guilty. People have to take into consideration how they deal with the possible fallout. You know, some people would say it's important, even if he's guilty, to maintain some kind of respect for the office, if you follow my thought. You know, so that whether it would be a smart move to convict Trump, and by doing so, you bring the office and how it is perceived and the authority of the office right down into the mud. Who wants to be responsible for that? And there we have a number of dilemmas, which we can't predict right now how specifically they will be responded to. Well, we got that discussion started today, and I'm grateful for the quality and the caliber of analysis. Now, most people get stuck at the very first point, which is, well, is he guilty? I think he's guilty. We ought to throw him in jail. That is not good analysis. You have to look at the thing from all sides. It's like those of you who have children, one of them does something really repugnant. Punishment is absolutely required, but what form? You have to now think carefully about how you deal with a situation that is likely to affect your entire household. And you have to have an afterlife. What will that be? And how do these considerations shape your response to, let's say, an explosive situation in your household. Very, very difficult. Very, very difficult to say. All right. We'll take this break and come back to a familiar subject by now, I hope, which is the land grab and the housing grab that is coming all across America, especially in its communities of color, right after this.
Everyone is talking about crime. Tell me, who are the criminals? I said, everybody's talking about crime, crime. Tell me, who are the criminals? I really don't.
You're listening to Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we come back to a subject that we began looking at more definitively about 2 weeks ago, or maybe 3 weeks ago. And I just wanted to point this out because it is becoming a trend. Now, we started off by focusing on Harlem. Why? Because Harlem historically was the Mecca. Black Mecca. People gravitated toward Harlem. It produced a lot in the way of the arts. It assisted people into the fullness, or at least at the time, the permitted fullness of their talents. It's for us an emotional point of reference, a historical point of reference too. And we saw Harlem, like most of the major black enclaves in this country, go down, down, down. Retrenchment of services, the basic ignoring of these communities, except, well, they provide votes, so we could pay attention to them on that level, but little to the things that make a community work. Housing is one of those things that we look at in terms of how a community functions, whether it will thrive, whether it survives. I just want to read an item from, just to continue that thought, from the real estate community, from the newspaper or a circular called The Real Deal. And the headline is, Irving Langer's E&M Associates sells Harlem apartment portfolio to Sugar Hill Capital for more than $250 million. Now, that is shocking that we could actually think that there are people making this kind of money and making these kinds of deals on a community that we don't think that much of, right? Harlem, you know, it's nice, but there's mostly emotion attached to it. Not real money, not real value. But here's one company selling its portfolio. Now, this is a landlord selling to another landlord his portfolio for more than $250 million. And the buildings that he's selling are mostly on the north and northwest corner, this is a corner of Central Park, between Manhattan and St. Nicholas Avenues. $250 million worth of real estate there. Yet you drive by and it looks like nothing. It doesn't present itself as a pocket of real estate worth $250 million, and that's because they let it go right down the tubes, just providing the bare minimum of upkeep that the tenants have to live with. But I bet you it is not part of the consciousness of people living in these buildings every day that they're living in serious real estate. This just takes into account 50 buildings that we're talking about in his portfolio. He has 50 buildings, and now he's able to sell at $250 million in Sugar Hill. You see what I'm talking about? You know, it is amazing what is happening. It is amazing what is happening. There is this land grab. It's quiet, almost imperceptible. But that doesn't mean that this isn't happening. Then we have the development. There's a lot of noise now about the extension of the subway line on the east side. All of this is happening at the same time. I already explained to you some of the real estate, the multi-million dollar real estate deals that have been going on very quietly, but people don't know about it. So here is yet some more proof that little by little, Harlem has been carved up by development interests, and they are now moving more aggressively to turn the real estate into a financial bonanza. I want to read you another thing that came to my attention because I've been following some of the news on Harlem. The J Group, as it's called, secures $37 million of financing for mixed-use development at 54-62 West 125th Street in Harlem. Really? So that's another project that is going to come to Harlem, and it is so quiet. People are not putting two and two together. Harlem is pretty much spoken for in terms of a group of developers and financiers coming together who will essentially take this community. They're taking the community. Now, this raises the question, how did this happen? How is it that this is happening? You didn't hear notices go out. Notices went out, perhaps, and we don't know. These things, these multi-million dollar co-op developments and redesign of Harlem by people who don't live there and not concerned about people living there. Harlem is now to be reimagined. We talked about this as it relates to Detroit. What is going on there in terms of housing? It's spoken for. There have been invaders, and they've gotten their way. They've gotten the permits they want. They've been able to raise the financing to tear down, quote, old buildings, and put up new ones for an imagined new population who will then go there. And we have the city providing other support services, like an entire subway line being developed to take people all the way up as in New York City to Washington Heights on the east side. So things are happening, and not by chance. These things are happening in concert with each other. And now it may be very late. It may be too late. But we have to ask questions. How could all of these deals, how could the banks be so generous all of a sudden? The same banks that would not lend to local merchants and to local people to help fix up their houses. They can't get loans. But these developers have gotten a lot of money, and they've been able to get zero opposition because they're working with the city. The city is working with them. And they are taking it all over. Now, technically, Harlem is spoken for. Harlem is spoken for. They're in charge. And they've been able to do all of this on the QT, very quiet. Nobody, no notices are posted of public meetings. We haven't had a vote on these developments. Nobody knows the history of these developers and what they do. What will become of the displaced population? What will the impact be? So now we have no doubt that there is a concerted effort to take land and housing away from Harlem and transform it, but with the idea that whoever is living in Harlem now better brace themselves that they won't be living in Harlem much longer. Thanks a lot. That brings us to the end of our program today. More tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Everyone is crying. None is crying out for justice. Everyone is crying out.